What we also know for our students, and again, as they get older, there is a reduced tolerance to heat, noise, crowding. More things are irritating. And I think that's not a strand that comes out clearly enough. We somehow think that if we're identifying this at an early age, we'll be able to put strategies in place to deal with that. But in fact, as we get older and our lifestyle kind of broadens, more and more things come into that lifestyle. So there are more things for us to be worried about, more scenarios for us to go out into. And lack of well-being affects how the person thinks about the world. So you may find, and we certainly find, children slide very quickly into feeling quite flat. And then we go into, well, they're not really motivated and they don't make sense. We don't recognise that sense of well-being. You know, it's hard to pull yourself up and say, it's okay, I'm going to be okay. And the thing that we've noticed with older students is the loss of control and aggression and destructiveness increase in adolescence, and that's not just, you know, kind of hormones racing through the body. Life becomes much more complex. And we don't see our students laughing very much. And you think, oh, wow, you know, we don't have that sense of jollity that we have around primary children. So in recognising what it's like for people with autism to have high anxiety, mood disorder, we've looked at what happens to us as typical people. So we have a heightened awareness that things can go wrong. So here I am driving into Woking. I don't know Woking very well. You know, I come to the theatre, so I always turn right, and here I am turning left. And then I see the sign, and I think, if I miss going round, I'm going to have to go all the way to the end. So my anxiety starts to rise. And then as my anxiety is rising, I start to change my breathing pattern because my heart is beating faster and my pulse is beating. And the moment I start to breathe more shallowly, then I can't get enough oxygen to my brain. What's the percentage of oxygen we need in our brain? Wow, absolutely. 20. So here I am going, where's the girl pot? So there's not enough oxygen going into my brain because the oxygen is just keeping my lung and my heart going. So now I have a problem in thinking clearly. You know where I'm going. I have a map. I can say to people, show me the way. I'm going to the church. Although I did say to somebody, am I in the right direction for the church? And they said, I don't know. Oh, thank you for your help. There's a sense when this anxiety builds up of, you know, you need to go to the loo. Will I be able to talk to you without going to the loo? And what we see typically with our children is problems around toileting. You know, either children are constipated or they have diarrhea. You know, they kind of either produce elephant poo or they don't go all week. And that kind of extreme is a manifestation of that anxiety level. People often notice that children with autism drink more water, and of course we're very geared up now, aren't we, as to how much water you have to have in your body during the daytime. And if you are in a stressed state, the body requires more water just to keep the cells in the body functioning. So now we're not just talking about somebody's lack of ability to communicate, but a physiological problem that people with autism experience that we're not addressing when we just look at a straightforward national curriculum, bums on seat, you're here to learn. You know, there's got to be more in our curriculum about what's happening to the body that inhibits all of those. We've also noticed with our students that there are periods in the day when their blood sugar level is varying. You know, you see children phasing in and out and you see their pallor changing. So they're engaged in learning, and sometimes you see this reduction that they go very, very pale. We've carried out some research, and there was some research done in the 70s, and it's never been really picked up. When typical people engage in an activity, so they walk into here, your pulse rate rises because it's a new situation. As you start your cognitive task, your pulse rate decreases. It drops rapidly. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to get yourself together to do the task. And that, in people with autism, that's not happening. The first perception of this is new, the pulse starts rating, the heart starts beating, and it doesn't drop. When we put our pulse monitors on our adolescent students and ask them if they'd be part of our research project, we found that their pulse rates were running on bums on seats doing a task that they knew at anything between 110 and 120 beats. And what should it be? What's kind of typical heart rate? Anything between 60 and 84, you know, is like a typical range. And here are these guys doing routine tasks that they know very well, and they've got their heart rate monitors on for, you know, a couple of weeks at a time, so they've got used to wearing them, and they know that they're doing some research, and we're joking about it. And it's not decreasing. You know, when they're doing tasks that they're really comfortable with, their pulse rate isn't decreasing in the way that ours drops. And I think that's an interesting area, and I'm going to try and find a clinician to pick up on that. Because it means that you are always in an agitated state. Ah, keep your breath, comes out, keep going. Ah, you are a pathetic lot. And again. And again. And one more time. Okay, what does your heart feel like? Can you feel it going, okay. What must it be like for that to be constantly going on inside you when you're faced with any new task? So the teacher says, I'm going to show you something new. The teacher says, come and look at the table. The teacher opens the book and says, today we're going to read a story. Because all of that for you as a child with, you know, within autistic spectrum is like brand new. Oh my, I don't know what's going on here. I have no perception. So your heart is constantly beating like this.